Hi guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. How are you going out there, my heavy metal maniacs, my hard rocking amigos? I hope you're doing well. I'm actually feeling a lot better this week. And you know, you might have noticed those are eagle eared out there. I've noticed I haven't been myself for a couple of weeks. My little darling pet cat hasn't been unwell. So Phoebes, who has made an appearance on the show a few times, to some people's displeasure, but who cares? She's getting better. She's had a really tough month of March. And so we're coming through the woods now, which is really, really good. Anyway, this week's episode, we've been dabbling with all sorts of things the last couple of weeks. I really hope you enjoyed the one-off special I released on Friday last week with Rock Pit. Now, it's not for everyone. I know that. And I think I did actually lose a couple of listeners due to it. Well, you know, hey. You don't have to listen. This is a free thing. You're not paying for it. I don't want to do anything that's charging, because personally myself, I don't think I would quite give enough to charge you for it. I just love doing it. So if you listen, you listen, you listen, you don't. You don't listen, well, good luck to you. Anyway, back to a classic. This is a hidden gem, this album. This is one of those albums, one of those bands where I'm going to tell you right from the start, I only like this album from this band. Now, they've produced quite a few albums over the years, but this is my favourite one. I came to know about Stormwitch from my very good friend Benji, who's been on the show. Please go back to the episodes and listen to the ones we did on Sabaton and Anzac Day and all that sort of stuff. Those ones, the war related podcast episodes. Please go back to listen to those. But yes, so he sort of got me onto it about 4 years, maybe 5 years ago now. Yeah, probably close to 5 years. Hang on. Hot drink of tea. About 5 years ago. And I'd never heard of them. And I thought I had a really good knowledge of this sort of stuff. But they're a German band. Okay. And the album that we're going to be talking about is their eponymous first album. It's called Walpurgis Night. Okay, now, Walpurgis Night. We'll talk about that and what that means later on, but I'll just give you a quick rundown of the band. Now, this is from their Wikipedia page, okay, because there's not a lot to find about the band, to be honest with you. So, Stormwitch was a German heavy metal band formed in, now I'm going to get this wrong, sorry, my lovely German listeners, Heidenheim in 81. They've been called the Masters of Black Romantic by their fans. The band's song lyrics often focus on fantasy, occult, or historical themes, along with their contemporaries and countrymen, Helloween. Over time, they have changed their sound from a Judas Priest-esque style of heavy metal to a more keyboard-based form of power metal. Now, I'm going to disagree with that one, you'll find out why I disagree with that one, with the term Judas Priest-esque style music for this particular album anyway. Stormwitch was founded in the early 80s by childhood friends Harold Spengler, brackets, Lee Tarot, close brackets. And he's the one sort of mentioned on most of the lyric, sort of like the writer of the lyrics. Stefan Kaufmann, Steve Merchant, and Andy Muck, M-U-C-K, or Mook, if it's German, writing their first songs while they search for the final pieces of the band to play their live shows, including clubs and youth centres. The first lineup was completed by Peter Lang, or Peter Lancer, and Jürgen Wonnersfeltz. Sorry, and again, I'm really going to Wonnenwetsch, W-E-T-S-C-H. Sorry about that, Jürgen. The first album, Walpurgis Night, released in 1984, was recorded using little post-production as possible to remain true to the sound they were trying to achieve. They did not use multi-track recording, and this is what I'm going to come to you later on when we talk about the album. Instead of recording the album straight through, which is something that I really love, I have to say, we'll come back to that in a second, but I like straight through track recording. Because I like the rawness. I've always liked lo-fi. I like really clean and polished, wonderful music, as I do. There's something beautiful about well-engineered, well-produced music. But there's also being a child of the punk generation and loving that sort of lo-fi anyone can do DIY attitude. I quite like the idea of that you just play straight through. I mean, the Beatles played for most of the part, played straight through. I know I'm going to get told otherwise by Beatles fans. I'm sure that's what they did. They played straight into their amps and recorded straight through to the desk. I don't think there was a lot of post-production done on the early records, of course. On the later ones, I'm not going to talk about, you know what I mean? I don't want to get myself look like an idiot, more than an idiot I already look like, you know. Anyway, instead of recording the album, sorry, yeah, approximately a year later, they recorded the album Tales of Terror, which I miss, of which the master tapes were supposed to be destroyed, only recently being re-recorded using original LP albums. The third album, Stranger Than Heaven, was released in 1986, followed by The Beauty and the Beast in 1987, and 1989 they released Eye of the Storm and Live in Budapest. So they sort of became this sort of, they changed the sound, as it says at the beginning of that, okay? This particular album, though, is not Judas Priest-esque. It's very lazy writing that. Yes, Mr. Muck has. Mr. Muck sounds like a dirty Mr. Man, doesn't it? Sorry, Andy. Andy Aldrian, I suppose he's called in other places to make it more anglicized. Anyway, Andy's vocals are, yes, they're Judas Priest-esque, but they're more actually, if you really had to listen to the album and take some note, they sound a lot more like Paul Di'Anno. In fact, it's this could be if you. If you weren't, if you didn't know, and you close your eyes, apart from some of the more sort of basic bass parts and the drumming being a little bit flat in the mix, you would think it was a Maiden album to some extent. If there are, there's a track on it on the second side of the album, which is the second to last album called Excalibur, which is ridiculously like Maiden. But anyway, I digress. There's nothing wrong with that. When this album came out in 84, and Number of the Beast came out in 80, oh God, 81 was it? I did write it, 82. So you know they're going to get influences from somewhere. Now you might say, how can a German band be new wave of British heavy metal? Now I've had this conversation with you got guys before, and I've had a bit, I'm going to stand in my corner here. Yes, it can be. It may not be technically new wave of British heavy metal, but it's new wave of heavy metal. It's that new sound. And it's very hard and difficult to define that sound as it changed from year to year, from album to album, from band to band. Just like punk is very difficult to define. Just like new progressive rock is difficult to define. Just like, you know, it's difficult. Lo-fi sounding, heavy blues-driven guitar, falsetto vocals, lyrics about witches and dragons, and using you know, really interesting pieces of literature, i.e., Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, Alexander the Great, to name a couple, to get, you know, to sort of, sort of intellectualize, I think, in some strange way. I think it was a pushback from the punk, you know, the oi, spit you in the eye, simple lyric. Even though I looked out over my glasses when I say this, there's no one point that the lyrics written by John Lydon were ever simple. Not that the Pistols was the only punk band, if you know what I mean, though. Same with the Stranglers, same with the Damned. They were very clever written pieces of music, but the perception of the music was that it was straightforward and bass. And I think a lot of these bands come through, don't fight against their progressive music love. They sort of, so they sort of hold on to it. In fact, I know that Maiden did, and Maiden still does. And then so they want to be a little bit more intellectual, but still at the same time, rocking your ass off. Okay, so that's really new wave of British heavy metal in a nutshell. So you take away the British, and it's just new wave of metal, isn't it? So any country that it comes from, it's just you'll notice going to sound a bit like that. Like punk itself, came from two factions. You know, you got the New York style punk, which was more your more your fashion-based elitist kind of set to one place scene, you know, New York or whatever. Whereas London's punk and drug related, whereas New York, London's punk scene was basic, or the UK's punk scene was about poor politicians, bad living conditions, poor education, no jobs, you know, living in a country that was fighting to basically put bread on its table, on its people's tables, shit on the streets, you know, mess everywhere, low wages and so on, union driven. So two different things, but the same kind, but sort of merged, become the same kind of sound. And I think this is what's happening with, you know, bands like Germany when they listen to new wave of British heavy metal, or like any other international countries that that wanted to sort of ape or copy the sound. It's not a copy as such, it's just joining in, I think, you know. It's just a matter of being part of the family as such. But like a lot of great bands, they sort of, for me, unlike Maiden and the sort of those sort of bands, they who got instant, almost instant exposure, being in the UK particularly, English being their first language, it was, you know, they got, they sort of went into the stratosphere very quickly, well, quicker than most, and so they could have the luxury of making more and more records in the way they want to make it. So bands like Witch, Stormwitch, who sort of di disappear into the annals of metal, who have a huge following in Germany, and as they should, they're a great band. As I said, I only like this one album, but they sort of didn't, you don't get the, they didn't get those sort of bands, like people like Diamond Head and Praying Mantis, and even to some extent Tigers of Pang Tang, and all those bands I bloody love. They didn't hit the zeitgeist as well as, say, Maiden did or Priest, even though, as I've said before, I don't like putting Priest in the new wave of British heavy metal subgenre. You know what I mean? But bands like Holocaust and you know, Witchfinder General, they all sort of have wonderful albums, but they're not on the lips of every metal fan out there, even any heavy rock fan. People know who Priest is, they know who Maiden are. Pretty straight away. You know, Def Leppard, they know straight away. They're not going to go, hey, wow, Vardis. They're not going to do it, sadly. But this is what we're here for. This is what I'm doing. This is what this show is all about. Anyway, I'm going to go through the different tracks in the second half. But Walpurgis Night, interesting, interesting thing. You look at the album cover, and it's got a, well, it's been re-released recently, but the original album cover has got this guy in sort of like bondage gear, if you imagine, like a Thor, a warrior outfit, and he's got a bullwhip and he's near an open fire, and you hear the name Walpurgis Night and you think, oh wow, it's got to be satanic. And absolutely, what is wonderful about this is it's not. Walpurgis Night is actually as a time in the year when you celebrate, or you, it's a fighting, I'm going to get the information up so I can give it to you exactly right. One second. It's actually a saint's day. The origins of the holiday date back to pagan celebrations of fertility rites and the coming of spring. Okay, so it's not, you know, it's not devil worship by any means, and it comes across in the lyrics actually. Traditionally speaking, the celebration is a night to pay tribute to the 8th century Saint Walpurga. Walpurga was an English-born nun who travelled to Germany to perform missionary work under her uncle, Saint Boniface. She has been praised by Christians for successfully warding off pests, illness, and witchcraft. So basically, they're celebrating a saint to say thank you for keeping away pestilence and witches. Now, it's a very int I'm let me try to find the day that it's usually. It comes under several names, okay? And it's celebrated on the night of the 30th of April. So coming up, guys. And the first of and to the and the 1st of May. The feast commemorates with the canonization of Saint Walpurga and the movement of her relics to organize. I'm gonna butcher this. Elstadt, both of which occurred on the 1st of May 870. There you go. It comes under different names: Walpurga's Night, Saint Walpurga's Night, Saint Walpurga's Eve, Saint Walpurgis Eve, Saint Walpurga's Day. Okay, Valborg Vapu. It's observed by the Catholic Church, Lutheran Church, and the Anglican Church. There you go, right? It's celebrations by bonfires and dancing. There you go. It's related to May Day and Easter because it's spring. So, I found that because when I first heard this album and I saw the cover, I figured, oh, okay, it's a sort of Number of the Beastie kind of typical, very popular back in between 81 to 85, those sort of satanic, before the satanic panic thing, very popular with the new wave appreciation metal bands, sort of pretend Satanism, adding a darkness, a dark side to their machismo, to their image, to be more sort of interesting and exciting. We all know that Iron Maiden are not devil worshippers, but hey, there are people out there when the album came out truly thought they were. And I'm sure people that picked up this album looked at the cover and went, oh man, I bet these aren't hardcore satanic black metalers from Norway. These are clearly educated Christian, probably Christian, I don't know, I shouldn't make that up. Interested in unusual imagery, and I would never heard of Saint Walpurga's as a saint. I'd never heard of that before. All right, so hey, it you open your eyes to everything. So that's what the album is named on. The album itself has a variety of different themes, which I'll talk to you in the second half. Beautifully recorded, even for a lo-fi. It has such diverse mixture of techniques and of textures. It's very similar sounding all the way through. Yes, you do have the chunka 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 gallop that you get with most of those sort of this era's albums, with the occasional guitar break, a little bit of drum break. The bass itself is usually quite muted, and the vocals, Andy's vocals, as I said before, they go from Diano to Halford and back again, usually hanging around the Diano, in my opinion, which is a brilliant for me because I bloody love the first two Maiden albums. In fact, I covet them higher than some of the Dickinson albums, and I know that that is controversial amongst certain Maiden fans, but it is what it is, right? You love what you love, and that's about it. Anyway, so going to come into the advert now, and I'll chat to you on the other side when we go track for track on this brilliant Lost album. Bye for now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to part two. Thanks for coming back. If you have come back, wonderful. If you haven't, well, see you next time. You didn't hear this anyway. It doesn't matter. Talking to the wind. Anyway, oh, bang my mic. Storm Witch's Walpurgis Night. So we know it's a fun mix of different types of concepts. Musically, it's very similar. It's when you listen to it, and I really do hope you do listen to it, because you can hear it on Spotify and iTunes and so on. I think you're going to really enjoy it. For those that are unsure if they like new wave of British heavy metal, there are a few people out there, which I don't understand. I'm scratching my head as we speak because it makes me feel weird when I say it. But there's a people out there that don't enjoy it, though. Have a listen to this and see what you think, because this might draw you in. Particularly if you're a Maiden fan, and if you like Priest as well, you're going to love this album, okay? So it starts off with Cave of Steenfell, Steenfell. I've tried finding it. I thought, is it a book? Is it, I don't know. I sort of got close to one I thought was an Isaac Asimov book, but that was just Caves of Steel. So I don't know quite... I'm not quite sure what it's about. I mean, lyrically, it really sort of a great opening song, because it doesn't, it's quite bouncy. It's got a brilliant middle eight guitar solo in it. But let me just see if I can find the lyric to it. One second. Steenfell, Soffell, sorry, not Feell. Here we go. See, it says, are you ready? All right. Once upon a time, thunder and lightning shook the sky. The sea roared up. The fisher's boat was thrown about. He found a cave that gave him shelter through the night. The sea is calmed. On its way, he heard a shout, a thundering voice that led him back into the cave. There he saw a light from an opening, a gleaming lake with gold from the ship named Camelan. It could be yours. Why don't you grab this thing? A thundering voice out of the sea. So, Camelan. All right, let's do some live. Let's do some live research. Camelan. All right, this is thrilling, isn't it? I'm on my Camelan. Let's have a look. Roman Princip. Oh, okay. Okie dokie. Camelan. Roman. Oh, so it's like it must be to do with the Romans or something, because it says here. It's a Camelan. It's a Roman fort, like a force, like a tank. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, I just quickly Googled that, so I may have Googled that completely wrong. Lucky camel toe didn't come up, right? Anyway, great opening to this album. It really does sound straight off the bat. Please, tell me if I'm wrong, and I really would like you to come to my, you know, pop over to YouTube where this is off and on every week, and you can leave notes, or you can come leave notes on Spotify. You can come to my webpage. When I say my webpage, my Facebook page, and private message me. It sounds straight off the bat like Killers, something from Killers. It really does. It feels epic, and I think that's the beauty of New Album, isn't it? It's the epic feel of it. That I don't know it. Would teenagers now be listening to songs like this? I highly doubt it, to be honest with you, because I don't, and this is an indictment on the education system all over the world, and not just here in Australia, and I'm not in America, not just England, all over the world. I think it's an indictment where, you know, 16-year-old kids are not going to be reading the classics most of the time. And if they are, they're not listening to heavy metal, right? It might be, but I highly doubt it. Anyway, move straight on to one of my favorites on this album, which is Priest of Evil. Now, Priest of Evil is right out of the Number of the Beast Venom-esque, not like Venom musically, Venom lyrically. It's straight out of that songbook, right out of that gate. It's got a gallop. It's got a falsetto vocal that drops from Bruce to Rob, and Rob to Bruce, and back again. Andy, I'm not, if you're listening to this, you ever hear this, this is not a derisionary thing. This is a compliment. It's very executed. It's got a melodic solo in it. And of course, it has the lyrics, the usual satanic imagery, right? I'll grab you the lyric. Where is my, put it somewhere. Where did I put it? Ah, here we go. Oh, where'd I put the lyrics for this song? Okay, Here we go. Priests of Evil. Okay. And again, it does. You'll hear this, right? Now the last rays of daylight slowly fade away. The night is closing in outside of the village. There's a meeting on the hill. They're calling the sin. Okay. Torches ablaze. The air is full of sulfur yellow haze. Holy beast, they've come to celebrate your bloody feast. Priest of evil adores the number 666. Priest of evil, spit on every crucifix. Take the black chalk made of bone meal. Draw the evil pentagram. Satan will rise. Mix the fresh blood of a he-goat with the ashes of a witch. Black sacrifice, Lord of Hell. See, they're basically just smashing in every sort of pagan satanic image they can in their song. You know, everything you've ever seen from when you've watched one of my favorite horror movies of all time, which is Hammer's the Devil Rides Out, was my father's favorite book, written by Dennis Wheatley. He loved reading Dennis Wheatley, and he used to read it to me. And that's never done anything wrong to me, is it? He says with a tick, you know. No, I was a young boy and he read me Dennis Wheatley, and Devil Rides Out is one of my favorite books, and actually one of my favorite movies with Christopher Lee, one of Hammer's epics. Anyway, they just smashed every image they could in there, and they smashed it in with a really good piece of music. Take away the sort of the rather heavy-handed satanic imagery, and you get quite a fun, well-rounded. It is lo-fi, and you can feel the lo-fi in it. I like that. It feels like the drums are slightly mixed back. It doesn't have a real polished sound. There are bits missing, which I think that if they were to do it again now, it would ruin it, because it's like trying to record Never Mind the Bollocks now. Or, you know, they say that Maiden or Steve Harris doesn't like Killers, or the first album, sorry, Maiden, because he thinks it's not well produced well enough. I think that's the glory of it, Steve. Leave well alone. Don't touch it. You know, and it had straight out the bat, it's got the gallop. Everyone loves the gallop, and that's what really we sort of come to these albums for, isn't it? For me. Yeah, as I said, the drums are a bit thin, but that could be a fact that the original drummer wasn't up to the, you know, he wasn't a Clive Burr, right? He wasn't up to the task. Maybe, I don't know. That's probably, it's disparaging the guys playing drums, you know. But hey, anyway, that may be it, right? That may be it. They've reissued it, as I said, on Nuclear Blast recently, because it was originally on Gamma Records, and they've re-released it on Nuclear Blast, and I think they've polished it a bit, and maybe the vinyl version, which I snuck a copy of, I managed to get one. Really bloody expensive was for an original copy, I have to add, because they're not easy to get hold of, is actually a bit, I think it's more accurate to the sound than what you might hear on the reissue version on Spotify and all those streaming platforms are available. And then we move on to a fun. This is fun, okay? This, you don't need to explain this one. I don't need to read the lyrics about this. This is just, it says what it does on the bottle, right? On the label, Skull and Crossbones, Pirates. This is, in my opinion, the best vocal track on the album by Andy. It's very chug, chug, chuggy, okay? It's got some great lyrics. Bloodstained Steel, like that, like Don't Hesitate. It's like, you know, it's a bit like Flash of the Blade, right? The vocal phrasing on this song I've written in a big letters is a thing of beauty. The way that Andy punctuates the chorus with the music is something that makes me smile. Okay, let's see if I can find that. Where is it? Here you go. So it goes: Caribbean sunrise and the sea lighting rays. On the red horizon, ships appear with sails that seem to blaze. 40 fearless outlaws, always ready to fight. They want the gold and women and a bottle of Jamaican rum each night. And then this is when I like the lyric where he punctuates the music here. He goes, try to flee when you see the flag of terror flying over you. I'm not giving it any justice because, you know, I'm about as useful singing into a mic as a wet paper bag, right? So, but it's just got lovely imagery. Peaked grapnels crash through your ship. They attack out of the blue, skull and crossbows, blood in sight. Burning sails light up the night, skull and crossbows. Piracy, they're the tigers of the sea, greed for pearls and diamonds. They are all hell-bent for gold. Their notorious symbol makes them every decent sailor's blood run cold. Like the mighty eagle diving down on the lamb, pirates don't give mercy when they fight and get the upper hand. Now, that is, I'd love to be able to write a lyric like that. I couldn't because I'd think it was too silly sounding. But then you put it to the music and it really works. I think this is one of my favourites on the album. I don't know if it's my exact favourite, but it's definitely there. It's got some epic riffing. And this is the cornerstone from this entire album is the riffing on it all the way through is glorious. The solos are solos, you know. Once you, and this is going to sound so bad, but you hear one solo, you hear them all. They're all solos do what they do, right? They show off the virtuosity of the guitarist while punctuating the music with a bit of speed and interest and dynamics, okay? But the riffing is a different thing. It's why Tony Iommi is the greatest there is, because yeah, you will remember his solos, but you mainly remember his riffs, right? Because they're the thing that hold or glue the album or songs together. The things you remember. You don't remember the solos on Smoke on the Water, but you remember the riff, yeah? Exactly, yes, right. So it's where I'm coming from. I've done an episode on riffing, Riff Masters, I'm sure. If I haven't, it's coming. And then we sort of push into Werewolves of the Night. Again, we're going back to the fantasy, the nighttime evils of the night, okay? This is actually a well-constructed concept. In the lyric, it's about someone trapped in a foggy forest being hunted by werewolves. Of course, this is 84. So if you think around about 84 is when we got, now I could be wrong, this is off the top of my head, is when we got the werewolf movie craze, okay? Around that, in the early 80s anyway, when you had American Werewolf in London, The Howling, Wolfen, Company of Wolves. You know, you had quite a few, Silver Bullet, worst werewolf movie ever made. And I will stand my corner on that one. That wolf is terrible. It was by Carlo Rambaldi, the guy that made the Alien Head, and also did, can't forgive him for this, he also made E.T. But he's not a bad special effects artist, but the wolf in Silver Bullet is just terrible. It's a man in a fake bear suit. It's just awful. When you compare it to Rob Bottin's work on The Howling or, the work on American Werewolf in London, but you know, it's just, sorry, I paused it halfway through saying crazy, so I saw in crazy, I'm not going to go back again. Anyway, Rob and Rick Baker's work on American Werewolf in London, you can't, the only person I think, sadly, and this is a different note, I've gone off a tangent, that never really did a werewolf to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, he's done Furry Creatures, but, and that was Tom Savini. One of my personal heroes, makeup special effects artists. He of Dawn of the Dead, Maniac, Martin, Day of the Dead. You know, those brilliant movies, those splashy 80s extreme gore movies. Very clever man. He never did, I don't remember doing a wolf. I know he did sort of a wolf in a dream sequence in a movie somewhere, maybe. Fluffy from Tales from the Crypt is not really a wolf, though, is it? Anyway. Maybe he just didn't want to. Who knows? One day I might get to ask him. He was in Sydney once doing a talk and I didn't go. I don't know why I didn't go. Maybe I was working. Anyway, It's a brilliant song. It does sound very much like, back to the song, guys, back to the song, Where the Wolves of the Night. It sounds very much like Deano here. It's got a real frostiness to the song. It sounds like it's recorded, they've put a muffle over it, or they've brought back the mix. I'm not quite sure. But it has a sort of misty feel. And I think that's probably what they're trying to get from this song. It's got really lovely arpeggios in the solo. It has a real cold and fearful feel. And I just think he is very much, very, very, very much Deano in the lyric, in the vocal range here. It's almost uncanny, in fact, really. I won't let you down. Are you going to say you didn't even mention the lyrics, Tone, like you like to do that? That's what you come for. Well, actually, it's actually a really quite a lyrically thick song. There's quite a lot going on, but there's some really good imagery. The sound of cracking bones echoes through my nightmares home. You've lost your life at Satan's race. Don't look back. They follow you, your tracks. You can hear them growl and grunt. Start to run. The chase has begun. There are werewolves on the hunt. I love it, you know, just the mob of beasts are hungry. They scent your sweaty body. They're doomed to hunt, born to kill. Don't look back. They follow you, your tracks. I just love it. These people, these group of young guys in the early 80s obviously love their horror movies. And why wouldn't you? And so for me, they obviously got a bit onto the wolf craze. And it was, as I said, there was a lot of them. I've only mentioned the most famous ones, but there was a lot of wolf movies that came out in around the early 80s. Mainly first, as I said, started off with American Werewolf in London. And interestingly enough about that one, Rob Bottin went on to make The Howling. He was working with Rick Baker as an apprentice, and then he got the offered job to make The Howling at like 19 years of old. I mean, it's ridiculous. Baker did help him on a few bits, but wasn't credited on some of the, because Baker had this thing called the changeover head, which is basically a fiberglass head that pushed through a foam latex skin that went from the single face, the human face, you know, to the wolf face in several phases. If you've never seen the movie, well, what are you doing? Where have you been? If you have, you'll understand what I mean. That's because, I mean, I'm sorry, this is just reminiscing because I used to be a special effects makeup artist years ago, and it was my love. And so when I think about these people, I think them the same way as I do music as well. Anyway, we're then going to move on to, oh yes, sorry, it also ends on this fantastic single sort of note echoing out by Andy, which I really, that's when he hits the that's when he hits the Halford. So when he hits a really high notes, he's in Halford territory, but most of the time he's in Deano territory. But let's be honest, it's just him himself. He's in his own territory, right? But you've got to compare it, like comparing wine or beer or whatever. Anyway, or fine art. The next song in is Flower in the Wind. Now this one, I felt a weird sadness. I'd listened to the song many times and not really taken notice of the lyric that much. And then when I sat down to study the song, it's a very clever, educated piece of music, right? It's basically, what I get from it, it's about famine throughout Europe and the grain harvest failing. And there's a great lyric, pale bony fingers searching through the fields, they scratch out nourishing seed. And there's also in there, there's a character, an evil miller that's stealing all the seed and grinding the flour for himself. And the flour is flying out of the mill into the wind and sort of mocking the poor and starving. That's why it's called Flower in the Wind. I think, personally, that it's one of the saddest and one of the most smartest pieces of early heavy metal you're ever going to hear, and on an album that, let's face it, listeners, I have listeners all over the world, right? I do. I've thousands and thousands and thousands of listeners. Thank you guys all over this world listening to me. I don't know why, but they are. I think a handful of them would know who this band is. A handful of them would know this album. And, you know, not many of them would put the album on and go to this track and think, let me have a listen to it and see what it's actually about. And it's a really smart, really intelligent piece of music. Actually, hang on, have I missed? I think I've jumped a song. Oh God, I've done it again. Oh, anyway, that is a great song. See me? My pages were stuck together. Yes. Okay. No, it's not. Yes, it is. After Werewolves of in the Night, we actually get. Rewind that, guys. Forget what. Just imagine I that bit moved forward slightly. I did a Tony. I did a HMT on your ass. The next song is Walpurgis Night, the title track. And I'm sure there's some people who love this album going, Tony, you've missed the title track. It was because when I was making notes, sometimes, as you can hear, paper, they get stuck together. And I do the songs in order. And I flicked it across, and I must have just missed that piece of paper. So, Walpurgis Night. I've already mentioned what it's about. It, at the beginning, is actually a brilliant piece of music. It's actually the most bouncy and fun piece on the album. It's the song that will draw you in. It's one of the songs that was released. I don't think it was released as a single. It doesn't say if it was. I can't really find out enough information about it if it was or not. But it, you know, title track mention, it's bouncy, it's fun. It's got crazy Rob Halford-esque falsetto vocals in it. It's a bonfire of a song, right? Okay. Let me give you the lyric for it. Okay. The time has come. The witches are ready. Tonight on the hill, Black Sabbath, evil right. They are descending on the magical broomsticks, riding on the goats through the night. Come nearer, come nearer. You can't resist their might at Walpurgis Night. All round you can smell a nasty, strange scent. They are making oils from bodies of murdered infants. They're dancing around a hot, flickering fire, mixing poison and singing curse songs. Come nearer, come nearer. You can't resist their might at all Walpurgis Night. Watered feet are trembling, the ground like earthquakes. They are making love with broomsticks and rats and snakes, holding crazy orgies with the devil, praying to the masters of hell. Come nearer, Walpurgis Night. Now, when you read those lyrics, you clearly see that the band don't quite know what the full thing of Walpurgis Night is. Although, is it the band, my dear listeners, is it the band doing a Venom on our asses? I've said on our asses twice now. Why have I done that? I don't know. Is it a Venom doing that? You know, like what Venom did at War with Satan? When I first heard that, I thought you were fighting Satan. But then you realize it's at war with Satan against the good of God, right? Is this their version of that? Is it the witches playing havoc on a night where St. Walpurgis is meant to be fighting the witches, right? Yes, they may have done a surreptitious change on our ass, right? I said it again. I said the words three times. What is going on? I have absolutely no idea. Please forgive me, dear listeners. I'm just a little bit, maybe slightly over-caffeinated. Who knows? But yes, we've moved on from that. So it's a great song. It's one of those songs that comes on a lot of. You often hear it on best of albums or collections like, Heavy Metal of the 80s. Or it is on some of those rare compilation albums. By no means is it the best song on the album. It is a fun song. I enjoy listening to it. I love the vocal point, the pitch that Andy gets in the chorus. And it's nice and chuggy. And it's nice and sing-along. But I don't know if it's my favourite. Does it sit well with things like Werewolves of the Night and, you know, the eerily sad and thought-provoking Flower in the Wind? Probably not. So we've skipped from Walpurgis Night, then we've gone Flower in the Wind, which is a brilliant song, and then we go to the next track, which is definitely the right one, Warlord. Warlord, I've written here, says it all. It's about a merciless killer who's fighting. He's fighting and he's running out of time. You know, he's coming to the end of his battling life. I think he's getting war weary. It's very technically bluesy, this song. It's got a nice change of pace in the middle, becomes quite bluesy. It has, like I haven't mentioned this before, it's very much like Maiden because it has different time changes in this album and it doesn't stick to one, you know, 4-4. It has different level, you know, go all over the place. And then, you know, it does that, and it, dare I say, it's almost kind of purpley. And when I say that, I mean deep purpley, guys. It's a bit, let's get the purp out, right? You know? Lyrically, it's not certainly not setting the world alight weirdly, right? It's just a good story. They make good stories, this band. Flashes of lightning destroying the peace of the night. On the horizon, there are great flames shining bright. He's armed, he's ready and willing to stand and fight until the end. He's used to blood shed and killing. Black death is his best friend. Pain and torture, flames of slaughter, the smell of blood everywhere. Bleeding warriors, bloodstained armors, dying fighters when the warrior's hot breath burns the air. He rules with terror, mercy's world. Mercy's a word he does not know. Where he stays, the stands of time are running low. His father was the rolling thunder. He taught him, son, you're born to fight. Pain and torture, flames and slaughter, the smell of blood everywhere. Bleeding warriors, blooded stained armors, dying fighters, where the warrior's hot breath burns the air. So you can sort of see that he's coming. It's very Maiden-y, that term. Not that you can say it's really a direct copy of anything, but it just feels this one has a little bit of, I've put Flash of the Blade on there as well. A little bit of the first couple of Maiden albums. Certainly more the Bruce era than the Deano era. But it certainly has that feel. It's actually typical of the genre. You know, it's epic. It's fast-paced. It's violent, but without being so violent your mum and dad wouldn't let you listen to it, if you know what I mean. Enough to be rebellious, but not suddenly make you into a homicidal maniac, as some people think it did, which is also a load of bollocks. Dare I say that? And for the American listeners, a load of crap. Really, really great song. The second side of this album is actually my favourite side. We move on to... Oh my God, I keep saying it's Maidenly, but it is Excalibur. This is the obligatory instrumental that seemed to be on the case of a lot of early heavy metal albums of the early 80s. It really does. I put it on, I was listening to it, and, oh, Transylvania. It's a very different thing to Transylvania, though, because it sort of changes time signatures quite dramatically, like on a 5 cent piece, like on a penny coin or a cent coin or a dime. It turns, right? And you've suddenly got this beautiful sort of... if you listen to Sabbath's Dreamweaver, which I've talked about in an episode before, go back and listen, there's a piece of sort of acoustic guitar that Andy Sneap plays that this sounds like. Obviously, this was after that. It feels like Andy may have been influenced by this piece of music. It's actually really beautiful. And then suddenly, within a blink of an eye, it's back to a gallop, back to interesting, bouncy, solid rhythms. And there you go. There you have the obligatory standard, although this isn't standard, instrumental piece of music. And then we finish the album on Thunderland. Now, this one strays massively from its Maiden roots and goes, influences, and goes right into the world of Iron Maiden. Now, sorry, Judas Priest. Now, Iron Maiden never really wrote a song about... it did surreptitiously write songs about the family of heavy metal supporters and fans. Right, if you want to think about Blood Brothers is sort of it, and Iron Maiden is sort of it, if you want to be obtuse, but they never really wrote a song like Priest did with, you know, about metal warriors and the fans and, you know, living for heavy metal. That sort of quite, it's a trope I never liked. It's a trope I still don't like. I don't like the, it's a little bit cringeworthy, right? It's a bit like some of the early 80s metal bands when they were over-sexualized lyrics, which I really don't like. And the way that they treated women in the lyrics in some of these songs and some of the early 80s bands did not go down well. By no means am I a woke person. In fact, I'm anti-woke in a lot of ways. But what I am is an understander of what you don't do, and you don't belittle women, and you don't try not to, you know, overtly sexualize them in the arts, okay? And, you know, there's a lot of that goes on. This is a bit like this, okay? So it's a bit, it's got a good sing-along finish. The vocals are sharp. It's very blues-driven in the guitarist. It's got a lot of bombast. It's got a lot of Chuck Berry-style rhythms. And I think if you're writing a song about rock and roll and the love of heavy metal and heavy metal warriors and being in a, you know, being a clan and all that sort of thing and being brothers under the skin and all that hogwash, then you're going to, would you not, it would feel, it makes sense that you would take something from Chuck Berry and from the blues and from rock and roll, from Elvis and from the Beatles and all that sort of stuff, because it all is the same thing under the skin. The lyric itself, look, I'll give you a little nudge of it. Here we go. Metal nights in the city, can you feel the heat? The aching in your soul, silver chains and black leather. See, chains and black leather, so Priest-esque. Are you breaking out of your cage, losing control, rock and roll till the end, come make a stand in Thunderland? Yes. What a shame to some extent that they finished the album on this. I'm being very petty here when I say this, because I actually really like the song and I like singing along to it, and it is fun. I just, when you've it's maybe like Relief, possibly, you know, you've gone in some rather heavy imagery, some rather, you know, heavy lyrical, musical themes and techniques, and you finish on a sort of AC/DC style party song, and I don't mind that. If you're ending, your parting shot is that, all well and good. All right, I would have gone and put Thunderland, and then it ended with Excalibur, if it was me, or put Thunderland ending with Warlord, because it's a strong finish. I don't mind an instrumental finish, actually. I quite like an instrumental finish because it brings you down. You don't have to think about what the lyric or the, you know, the choruses and singing along, and just let it play over you. Now, I know you listeners of this show, regular listeners, know I love my lyric. It's what I love most about music is what you can create with words within music. As I'm not a great musician, you know, sort of an adequate bass player and even more adequate guitarist, less adequate guitarist, I like words. And so lyrics for me are really, really important. And I love that these bands feel free that they can do this. And that's why when they do use misogynistic imagery, it's one of the reasons why I'm not really, I mean, I sort of for a while enjoyed Steel Panther, but it's a one-trick pony and it's quite cringy, and I find it difficult. I mean, Maiden, apart from some of the songs that Maiden did, sort of like went that way, you know, Charlotte the Harlot, 22 Acacia Avenue. There's a few of them. But they weren't explicitly graphic, were they? They were. God, Tony, I'm sure they were looking at me and going, Tony, didn't you not listen to lyrics of 22 Acacia Avenue? Yes, I did. And I have done many, 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 many times. That's my Police Academy quote for you out there, those eagle-eyed people. Many, many, many times. That's it for me. I should end on an instrumental, shouldn't I? Ease out of the show. I hope you enjoyed it. Please do go and listen to the album. please come to, over to my Facebook page, go on to whichever platform you listen to me on. Do give me a like and subscribe. Do give me a review. Rate my show. It helps other people see me. I get into charts all over the world. It's very weird. At the moment, I'm doing quite well in Finland and Ecuador. Who would have thought it? But yes, Storm Witch, Walpurgis Night. It's not what you think it is. And the order is not is that I got incorrect is now correct. Bloody sticky papers. Anyway, I could edit this, you know. I could have edited it out and changed it. But where's the fun in that? I don't have too much time in my day to sit down and spend hours editing out all my issues. I started out, one of my game plans with this show, one of my underlying ethos was to never edit unless I had to. You got what you got. And I personally enjoy that. Sometimes I've had to, where I've said something inappropriate because of whatever the case may be, or something vastly inaccurate. But who cares about accuracy? Let's just love rock and roll, man. Just love heavy metal and everything involved with music in general, hey? Whatever form you love. You're over here with heavy metal tones, so clearly you like heavy metal, but there are other things you like as well. Anyway, that's me for now. I've hit my hour mark. I like to try and do an hour. Ciao, skis. Keep safe. And talk to you next week. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.